You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into another edition of the Locked On Officiating, Pacers podcast. I had to fit in a little joke at the beginning. As always, I am one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8 Points, 9 Seconds. And today, we have to talk about two games, the Cavaliers game and the Raptors game. And I also want to talk about the fantastic and apparently unstoppable Bojan Bogdanović. So, lots to get to today. But first, I'll do the elephant in the room, and I'll do this short rant both times. Yes, there were awful officiating calls at the end of both of these games. In the Cavaliers one, the Cavaliers ran a pick and roll at the top of the key. Rodney Hood came around a Larry Nance screen. The Pacers switched it and got Miles on to Rodney Hood. Miles played great D. Rodney Hood missed a shot. And then Larry Nance on the offensive rebound hooked Victor Oladipo. I think it was called a swim move or something in the last 2 minutes report. Ripped him to the ground, made it the easiest putback of his life. Cavs win by one as he puts in the putback. The last 2 minutes report, which is the dumbest thing in the entire planet. Why the heck do we have those? Said it was a foul, but it means nothing. So why did they even produce it? And yeah, in that moment, on that one possession, yeah, that technically cost the Pacers a win. But maybe don't put yourself in a situation where that is a problem, or B, you only have scored 91 points against the Cavs in a 48-minute game. And that's always my pushback with officiating being, like, quote-unquote, the cause of a loss. And, of course, like, in a more tangible setting like that, it's not easier. That's wrong. That's unfair to everyone to say they're just making an easy choice. But it's tangible might be the good word. I just said it. It's tangible to say, look, this one play, I can see it right there. They would have won if it weren't for that one play, and it's very obvious because the clock had 0 seconds left, and that makes sense to me, but it's a 48-minute game, not a one-play game, and unless it's like blatant, like some of the games you see from like LeBron taking over, he is the reason they win, you know, something like that. I hate reductively thinking like one play or one player lost a team a game. You know, they were up like 10 in the fourth, or not 10. They were almost, were up 10 at one point in the fourth quarter. I think they might have gotten to 8, 7. And the Cavs stink. So that's pathetic in its own way. So yes, that play happened. It was bad. The official made a terrible mistake, and the Pacers lost. I'm not going to reductively say that is why they lost, because let's talk about the game now. A lot went wrong for them. And a lot of what went wrong came from shooting the ball and putting the basketball through the net, which sounds so obvious. But there are two reasons for that. One, just bad shooting. But two, and I think this is the overarching theme, is there was low effort from the team. And like when you don't cut as hard, or when you don't, you know, when you bail on your screen a little before contact, things like little tiny effort, incremental things, it just doesn't quite free up and shake up the D as much to give you the open shots that you can more easily make. And look at that. They go 4 for 22 from 3 with McDermott hitting half of those. So, I mean, just putrid outside shooting. They shot under 40% for the whole game. Yet they found themselves in it at the end. And Oladipo has 3 free throws with under a minute to go and misses all 3, which is the other problem they had putting the ball through the net. They missed 8 free throws out of 21. And that was a theme in the Raptors game, too. They shot under 70% from the line in that one, too. You're not going to win shooting that poorly and from the three-point line and free throw line and giving that level of effort. It's just not going to happen. They were still, as usual, good on D. The Cavs only shot 41.8%. Only one Cav shot over 50%. That was Matthew Dellavedova, of all people. But they were not precise or refined. They didn't look like they were interested in winning this basketball game. And everyone was saying it's a trap game. I know that's like a college sports term. And I didn't buy it, but maybe I should have bought it because they did not look like they gave a damn about the Cleveland Cavaliers the entire game. And the stat line doesn't really show it, so that's complicated. You know, Bojan has 14 points, and he shot it okay, but he missed, like, overall from the inside the arc, he shot 50%, but he missed all 4 of his threes. He was not great on D. He was not cutting very sharp. Thad Young always tries hard, so he's not a guy. Vic, you know, just looks a step slower from that injury. DC didn't look like he was trying super hard. Tyreek never looks like he's trying hard and is probably out of shape. Both big men didn't look like they were, like, sprinting. I mean, they both did well on the glass, which isn't ever play, but the Cavs had every big man out besides Larry Nance. So nobody really looked like they had their heart in the game, and that matters, especially when the game ends 92-91. So it was not good. And I can't be reductive. They had 48 minutes to make shots, and they couldn't make any. Oladipo himself, 4 for 15, 1 for 6 from 3. And he made all of his free throws until that last minute when he had three. Just make one, and they're in overtime with a terrible Cavs team that they can beat. So just, it has to be better. The effort has to be there for a team that prides themselves on effort and continuity. To just stink it up that bad is embarrassing. And their offense didn't look smooth. Like, Nate's got to get on them at some point. And I'm sure he did. I'm not going to put a finger of blame on him in this instance. You can say all you want, but if they don't do it, you know, they just don't do it. But it was bad. And the missed foul really put the cherry on top of the loss. And credit the Cavs for, you know, I think the Fox Sports broadcast team did great in this one. You know, Chris and Quinn kept talking about, you know, the Pacers just let them keep hanging around. And I love to look at that matchup thing on the NBA.com, like the game summary thing. It has a lead tracker. And it's just like a wave of Cavs lead, Pacers lead, Cavs lead, Pacers lead, Cavs lead, Pacers lead. The whole game, like, this should be a team that you put away no problem. You only score 19 points in the first quarter. You're not putting them away. It's just not going to happen. So it's just awful to lose this game. I mean, this is the worst loss they've had in years. And they couldn't score it all down the stretch. I don't think they scored a point for, you know, a while at the end. They hit 91 in like the 2.5 minute mark or something, the 2 minute mark. So nothing went well for them, and it just can't happen that way if you're going to win a game. Like, nothing going well for you in winning, you just walk out and smile. And nothing going well for you in not winning, you have to say, okay, what went wrong? And you just didn't try hard enough, and you gotta exert more effort. And I was hoping they were going to exert more effort against the Raptors, and they did. So let's talk about why they didn't end up winning that game despite trying really hard and playing really well. So basketball games, as you would know, are 48 minutes long. And the Pacers played better than the Raptors for 35 minutes probably. But guess what? It's a 48-minute game. They were up 16-17, I want to say, mid-third. Couldn't hang on. Raptors had a beautiful comeback in the fourth quarter to come back and win. And the Pacers just completely changed their style. In that fourth quarter, they went away from playing any sort of offensive rhythm. You know, they were trying some things, like Darren Collison would dribble for a while and they'd try to set up floppy, and the Raptors would just kind of switch and force Vic to go back and not run it, and that didn't work. And then they tried to do a weak side pin down for Vic, and the Raptors were ready and it wasn't open. You know, and they were wasting 16 seconds like on purpose getting into their action because they want a lot of clock to go down, but then if the action dies, which it was because the Raptors are so good on defense, you just have nothing going on, and you have to force up some ISO, which just looks ugly. And, in your head, you want to not turn the ball over at that point in the game. So that's why you ISO, right? You want to not turn the ball over, and you maybe run a set, see if you can get one good look, but all you really care about, don't turn it over. Don't give the other team easy points. And that's fine, but you can't wait so long to get into your set that you have no other good option, and you end up putting up a dud of 11 points in the fourth quarter. The Pacers really did play better than the Raptors for most of this game. It's really a shame that they are going to lose this game, and especially because no Lowry, no Ibaka, and no Valanciunas was a good opportunity. But you can't have that kind of fourth quarter and expect to win. All the while, the Raptors finally figured out how to put the ball in the basket. They scored about the same every quarter, but down the stretch, they finally found a way to get threes going. Fred VanVleet hit two threes down the stretch. The unstoppable Kawhi Leonard was unstoppable. It felt like the whole game on both ends of the floor. So they just finally figured out on offense. They had a big run when they subbed in Lorenzo Brown, actually. He was playing like small ball five and just running around a bunch and making guys move around. And the Pacers almost saved it. You know, they had a few crummy turnovers at the end there. Miles dropped the ball that was thrown kind of a little too high for him, but a good hands player catches it. There's one on the bench, but Sabonis, Miles couldn't play as much because of foul trouble, so Sabonis played a lot. He wasn't being as effective as you'd hoped. He could have been in the fourth. That's why Miles was in the game, and then Miles himself had two turnovers. But he was playing incredible, incredible defense for, I think, about 3 or 4 minutes, like 7 or 8 possessions where he just, the Raptors scored only 2 points. And he kept him in it as DC hit a tough shot and Vic hit a tough shot. But it wasn't enough in the end when the Raptors finally put it all together. Their defense led to offense a lot in that fourth quarter. And it's really easy for your defense to lead to offense when the Pacers are ISOing every dang possession. So really bad coaching down the stretch to just let possessions go that long. And that's not true. You want possessions to go that long. The problem is waiting that long to get into your set. You don't need to do that. You need to take time off the clock. Understood. I agree with that assessment. You do not need to take that much time off the clock. But another elephant in the room because, 96-99, Raptors lead, 2 seconds to go. Pacers inbound. Bojan catches, turns. OG Anunoby reaching to block the shot. And here's why. The Raptors had a foul to give, so I'm guessing OG tried to just get in on him quick and get the foul. But Bojan did a really good job of getting the shot up about as fast as he could, ripped down his arm, and that's a foul. They did not call it. Again, I'm repeating the same rant as the first game. Tangible impact on the loss, yes. I mean, we have no idea that Bogey hits all three of those free throws if he does get the call, but he didn't get the call and didn't get the chance, so that feels unfair, understood, but there's, again, a 48-minute basketball game, and a 48-minute basketball game in which you, at one point, were winning by 17 points. You know, you cannot sit here and tell me the refs cost them the game when they had a 17-point lead with 16 minutes to go. I mean, just don't completely change your style of basketball to get you that point and you win that game. But given that exact situation, the ref was in the wrong, and it was clearly the wrong call. We'll get some BS today that says, the ref missed a hooking, swinging motion from OG Anunoby on the foul. It doesn't matter. It's so stupid that the NBA puts out these reports for ref transparency that do nothing but A, make people mad when they can't change the result, and B, don't change anything. They're just useless information. But the Pacers tried in this game. Everybody was actually running and playing good D, which was great. Holding the Raptors, even a crippled Raptors team, to 99 is impressive. Siakam, Leonard, Greg Monroe, despite his defensive issues, is a good offensive player. Van Vliet, Danny Green, CJ Miles. All those guys are good offensive players. So to hold that team to 99, even crippled, is impressive. Turner was very good, 10 and 14, with that good defense that I had mentioned before. Bojan, who I'm going to talk about in a minute, was very good, 18 points. Victor had 20 points, and that was good. He had some burst, but he had 6 turnovers, and some of that was just bad passing, trying to do a little too much. And I think I'm starting to discover why Vic doesn't get foul calls on him, and it's because he's kind of like Donovan Mitchell, that he tries to get all elastic on his finishes instead of just having contact and then going up, which he makes a lot of them, so it's okay, but it makes it look like the contact doesn't affect the shot as much, which you're not going to get to the line when that's the case. Collison had 5 turnovers as well. He was real bad. He had a good little run there for a sec during that 7-game, right before that 7-game win streak, but he's back to not being good this year. Tyreek, I have to talk about a little bit, because he made some good passes. He only ended up with 2 assists, but he made some good passes in this game where he, right when he caught the ball, he was ready to pass. The Spurs rule, you know, you have a half second, dribble, pass, shoot. And when he does that, I swear he's actually good. It's just when he holds the ball or, like, doesn't make a decision or takes it the length of the floor and throws up some crappy layup is when he's bad. Like, he did some okay things in this game. And he was a +1 off the bench. He only played 12 minutes, though. 2 of 5 shooting for 5 points. You know, he has not been what was supposed to be, which is a shame. But when he is decisive and not just trying to stop the ball all the time, he's a good player. And today he was an okay player. And Corey Joseph was excellent. Corey Joseph was the energy ball that he's always supposed to be, and he didn't take any of his crappy floaters. So overall, I think they actually played okay, except for the last 6 minutes of the game. And maybe some of the first quarter. They could not put it together for those moments, and that cost them. And we were playing the best teams in the league, a.k.a. And right now, this Raptors team has the best record, so the best team in the league. You cannot have a six-minute stretch where your team just shuts down and is terrible. So, credits to the Raptors. They found a way to win the game. Do not credit the Pacers for some terrible schematic decisions on the end. But let's do something happy. Let's talk about something happy. Even though the Cavs loss sucked, but the Raptors loss is what it is. I would not be upset about that if I was a fan of the team. Let's talk about Bojan Bogdanović and his incredible season he's had so far, because every day I feel like he can't keep this up and he keeps turning my head. So let's get to that after this break. So do you guys know, I want you to think about the last time Bojan Bogdanović did not score double-digit points. Because it was pre the elections. It was so long ago. There was still Sleeping Joe Donnelly ads on the thing. I love that joke because it seemed like there was 100 of those every 20 seconds, which was funny. 8 points for Bojan on November 2nd. He's had double-digit points every game since, which is just ridiculous. And I think he's only had one or two games shooting under 40% in that stretch, which is just crazy. He's been scorching hot from all over the field this whole season. He's only had three games under double-digit points the entire season. Three against Milwaukee on night number two, which easily his worst game of the year. Seven against the Spurs in that game that Tyreek actually dominated, and eight against the Bulls in that win in Chicago where DC hit the game winner late. Sorry, my voice is scratchy. It's very late in the day, and I am very tired. But he has just gone scorched earth for the better part of, I can't even do the math that fast, but I think that's 50 days now where he has yet to score under double-digit points. He's playing almost or over 30 minutes a game. We just have to appreciate what he's really doing. 51% shooting over that stretch, 45.5% from three on the season. I think he's a little bit above that for three. I think he's close to 47. This is just ridiculous. I keep thinking, this isn't who he is. He has a whole career body of work that we have to reference off of. But, 31 games like this, that's a lot. That's who a guy could be. And if this is what Bojan is, man, you have to keep this guy in free agency. These kind of shooters don't grow on trees. But that's not why he's been so good. He has this new, he's just so like a ball of frenetic, I'm trying to combine frenetic and a ball of energy, and I just said a ball of frenetic. He's just frenetic, flying around everywhere. Every time he comes off a screen, he's rubbing shoulders to create separation, and he's getting the angles right now on his dribble drives to the rim, and he's giving it up at the right time, so he's still not a threat when he's cut off, and he moves around after he passes, and he's making all these tough, not tough for him, but what you think are tough shots. Just some of the things he's doing are just such a big polish to what his game was even just last year, that now he's such a good inside-outside threat. He's the guy that we thought Tyreek would be, which is crazy. He's been a helpful second option for Victor Oladipo. He can hit the three ball. If only he could play like a defense, but he has really been good this year, and it has been a joy to watch how he does it. And I don't think he's getting enough attention for this. And the recipe to win the Most Improved Play Award is not be good and then be really good. It's usually be below average to substantially above average. So Bojan will not be winning any awards, which is unfortunate. But he has improved a ton. And that off the balance game has been a big part of it. And just everything he's doing is making me think that you have to keep the guy into the future, which is hard to say because paying a guy on early bird rights who has a good chance to walk is crazy. But 18.7 points per 36 minutes, that's an insanely good number. All of his offensive advanced stats are career highs. 1.2 offensive box plus minus is very good. Career high box plus minus in general, too, is very good. So just a lot of stuff going well for him this year on a pretty close to career high usage rate as well. So Bojan deserves a ton of credit for being as good as he has been this year. He's been a huge boon for the Pacers offense, 64% true shooting while shooting a lower three-point rate than last year and having higher usage. That is a tough combo. Most guys lose efficiency when they gain usage, not Bojan. Getting to the line pretty well, best rate of his career too. So his offensive scoring game is very good, and the Pacers really needed a guy to step up in that way, and Bojan has been the guy to do it. So he deserves a proper appreciation, and a segment is the way to do it. So two tough games, yeah. Two tough calls, yeah. But they're 48-minute games. One great player, yeah, you bet. And I think the Pacers' upcoming schedule is pretty easy. We'll forget about these two games before you even know it. That has been all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in. Adam will be on tomorrow to talk about the weekend games, and then we're going to start doing one weekend show a week. I don't know if we officially announced this. We're doing one day off in the midweek now, and then we're adding in a weekend schedule because me and Adam are busy people who need time off in the middle of the week and have more free time on the weekends because we're younger. So, we'll have Adam. We'll do the next two shows, one Friday and one on the weekend. I'm not sure what day. I'm guessing Sunday, and it'll be a recap of the Nets game and a preview of the Wizards game. So stay tuned for all that. Thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day, and Adam will be on tomorrow.